Well, to politics now, and the government would be turfed out of office if an election was held today, according to the results of the latest One News Variant poll. New Zealand First would be out of Parliament altogether, polling below the threshold at 4%. National has dropped to 36% and ACT to 7%, while Labour, the Greens and Te Pāti Māori would have enough under these numbers to form a government together. The Green Party rose 2 points, sitting on 14%. Their new co-leader, Chloe Swarbrick, also reached 6% as preferred Prime Minister, overtaking ACT leader David Seymour. The ACT Party denied our request for an interview. We didn't receive a response from New Zealand First or Te Pāti Māori. They're welcome to change their minds any point this morning. Chloe Swarbrick joins us now. Good morning.
Morning, Karen.
Well, you must be pretty happy with these numbers, both on a personal level and on a party level. What do you put it down to?
Yeah, so the first thing that I'd say is that we can't get too excited by one poll. These are, of course, a matter of kind of amalgamating them and looking at trends. But the broader point that I'd make is that it seems to definitely be reflective of the sentiments that I'm hearing out there from New Zealanders across the country and definitely at home in Auckland Central, which is an anger towards the agenda of this government, which is very much on the trajectory of exploiting both people and the planet. And the key point that I want to make to people who are listening is not to watch the polls, but to recognise that they are the polls. These numbers are not set in stone. If New Zealanders are frustrated, it is the time to turn up and engage in politics, not to switch off. Because unless this government pulls itself apart, and look, I wouldn't put it past them, there is 2.5 more years of this. So it's time to organise and make democracy work as it should, which means ongoing accountability.
Okay. How much of this is about some of those unpopular, perhaps, policies people weren't particularly aware of, say the smoking changes that this government has made, fast-tracking, these sort of things, or how much of it is to do with the economic conditions, whether they were brought about by Labor or government or not? The fact is, we are in a tough economic period. We're in recession. Unemployment's rising. Is it not unexpected that the government would pay some price for that?
For sure. And I'm sure you'll get a bunch of commentators who are willing to read the tea leaves on that. But the other point that I would make is that in the midst of those conditions, the government is making active decisions which are against people and the planet. Look, they came into office promising to act on the cost of living, and they've rolled back workers' rights and renters' rights. They've cut half-price public transport. They've cancelled free prescriptions. They're planning on gutting school lunches. And they've managed to find $2.9 billion down the back of the couch for landlord tax cuts, while rents are one of the major drivers of recent CPI inflation this quarter. Meanwhile, they're pursuing the kind of fast-track legislation, which obviously has had massive upheaval and seen people kind of come out in their thousands against it.
Mm. All right. Well, the counter-argument to that being that they're making the government smaller, more efficient, freeing up resources for the private sector, which will then grow the economy, pay down debt, lower interest rates, and help middle New Zealanders.
And how's that served us, Corinne? I mean, we've been mindlessly focused on chasing GDP at effectively all costs. And just to unpack that, GDP as a metric goes up when someone gets cancer, when someone's in a car crash, when there's a natural disaster, because there has to be economic transactions in order to undo that social ill. The squiggly line of GDP has continued to go up consistently, if you look at the trends, kind of, decade on decade. But what we have not seen is increases in the quality of people's lives or the quality of the natural environment that we all rely on.
That is interesting. So are you suggest a couple of things? Firstly, that we no longer use GDP as a sort of benchmark. And B, what I'm really getting to, are you saying that we shouldn't be pursuing a growth target, that economic growth is not the purpose or the goal here? You would choose something else. What would it be?
Look, we have a philosophical argument about this, and I could point you to the likes of Oxford economist Kate Raworth's Donut Economics, which speaks to a far better way that we could measure kind of economic outcomes when it comes to making sure we stay within our planetary limits and that we are not exploiting people, i.e. that everybody has enough to go around. But I take you back to the kind of core point here, Corinne, which is that we are currently running the economy in such a way that exploits both people and the planet. And I think that you are hearing and seeing reflected in the sentiment in this poll, albeit again,
sure, but
we can't get too excited because we need to look at the broader trends here, that people are fed up and the wheels are falling off of an austerity-based trickle-down economic nonsense of an economy.
And you say, look, I understand the philosophical argument you're talking about, we don't have all the time in the world this morning, but you're a politician, you've got to put it in simple terms. Are you saying you are, anti-growth?
I'm saying the growth at all costs should absolutely not be our focus. And what you've just put to me is that effectively that is the trajectory that this government is pursuing. And that's absolutely what we've heard in this rhetoric.
Hang on, what have I put to you? That they're pro-growth?
You've said that growth and GDP growth should be the core aim of the government based on the right-wing ideological talking points.
Doesn't that enable New Zealand the ability to buy the drugs, the Pharmac drugs, to buy the cell phones, all the things people want? If we don't pursue economic growth, what's the alternative in terms of our purchasing power in the world?
Well, that precludes the argument that we have an economy that sees distribution occur in a way that it should, with a fair and just tax system. So again, you're kind of getting ahead of oneself here by looking solely at the kind of growth question. We need to be talking about how we have an economy set up domestically such that everybody is able to benefit. And I would say, look, all you need to do is look back 100 odd years ago. We're in the midst of the Great Depression, and off the back of world wars, there were political decisions made to see that we implemented public healthcare, public education, the weekends, our public holidays, and we paid for it during a time of hardship for many by profits on those who had profited handsomely, and we created the welfare state. Obviously, that was shredded, that social contract, in the 80s and 90s, and we're living with the legacy of that today. And I would say 40 years on from Rogernomics in 1984, there are decisions to be made, Corin, confronted with the greatest kind of challenges that we've seen in the form of the climate crisis and wealth inequality, to completely transform that economy into one that works for people on the planet, as opposed to continues to pursue this mindless economic dogma.
Thank you very much. Good discussion. Thank you very much. That is interesting. Chloe Swarbrick there.